over at bangthebook.com. We are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Parker Michaels' daily NHL picks have been updated over there today. Also, Danny Vorgs' NFL power ratings updated for today. 58% lifetime with those. He's got some thoughts on sides and totals for the championship games here this weekend. We'll have a UFC preview coming out here shortly. We've got NBA, college basketball on a daily basis. Good stuff coming down the pipeline for Major League Baseball as well, which I'm very hard at work at now. So lots of good things coming your way over at bangthebook.com. Please keep it tuned over there and check out everything that we have to offer. Over on our Bang the Book YouTube page, I actually posted my Thursday 3-pack video already here today, so you can go and check that out with my 3 favorite plays of the day. And then, as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook, up to $500. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino, up to $500. At BetDSI, it's only a game until you bet it. Two guests on the program here today. We'll kick things off with Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. Brad, how's it going today, man?
That's going well. How you doing on this fine Thursday morning?
I'm doing well, except apparently I don't know what the hell date it is. So, at this time of the year, every day feels like it runs together because we don't have weeknight college football anymore that usually lets me know what day it is.
There you go. And then let's face it, in the wintertime in Northeast Ohio, a lot of days look the same there since you more often than not don't see the sun.
Yeah. Well, apparently you guys haven't seen the sun much either lately. So, joke's on you too.
You know what? No, it's not. Honestly, it's refreshing. I know the grass is always greener on the other side, but when you have 300 days of sun every year, I don't mind a week where some cloud and rain. I love it when it rains here in Vegas. It just the smell, the rain washes away the stench and stuff. I'm actually enjoying it. You know why? Because it's not snow and it's still 50 some degrees outside.
Fair enough. Well, it won't be snowing in New Orleans here for the NFC Championship game, A, because it's New Orleans, and B, because it's in a dome. So we've got the Rams and the Saints here. Interesting to see some line movement finally on the side for this game. A lot of places, 3-20, 3-15, still some 3.5s out there. But yesterday when we did the show, Brad, the market was painted 3.5.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised by the movement. I can understand Rams money coming into the marketplace, over the weekend from the L.A. crowd here in Vegas. But a little bit surprised that the money's coming in, this early. That you got to treat it as sharper money as the limits get, released higher throughout the course of the week. But with that being said, I'm still on the New Orleans side of things, and here's it for a couple of reasons. Number one. I look at the quarterback spot. I get it. There might be some concerns out there for Drew Brees, but I have way more concerns for Jared Goff. In fact, when you're stack ranking the quarterbacks, who doesn't fit with the four teams that are left? I'd argue Jared Goff, particularly Jared Goff on the road this year, much different story. At home, 22 touchdowns, 3 picks. On the road, 10 touchdowns, 9 picks. Much different quarterback. And, even with the injury to Sheldon Rankins on the defensive side of the ball, I still think New Orleans has the better defense. So I got the better quarterback, the better defense, and historically, probably, especially when the Saints are winning, I'd argue that the Saints easily have a top 5 home field advantage in the NFL. And now I can lay a field goal. I know I got to lay a little bit extra juice. I'm going to take the Saints here minus the points. They have never lost a home game in the playoffs under Brees and Peyton, and I don't think it happens on Sunday afternoon.
So let's play devil's advocate a little bit, though. Obviously you set up a good case for the Saints, and I think that's kind of been the case that we've made throughout the week here on the show. Why is this line moving down? Is there some sort of weakness with New Orleans that you see that is the reason why we're getting sharp money?
I can tell you a couple theories. Look, offensively, the Saints haven't set the world on fire as of late. I thought, one particular case could be made that, that they struggled with those 3 road games at the end of November and early December at Dallas, Tampa, and Carolina. That's when the weaknesses started showing. Maybe it makes some sense. You got a 40-year-old quarterback at the end of the season, and not as good as what he was at the beginning of the season. But really, those are three road games. So I'm thinking to myself, well, what's going to happen when they return home? And they put up 30 on Pittsburgh, and that kind of, you know, I would say a little bit less fearful. But then, you know, Philadelphia last week, I mean, the Saints struggled a little bit offensively. I know they had a couple time-consuming drives, but to put only 20 points on the board was a little bit surprising. I get that. And maybe another context clue, if you go all the way back to the first meeting between these two, the big-time money was on the Rams. Rams closed a two-point road favorite in that game, even though the Saints opened up the week as a small favorite. So I'm thinking a lot of the bigger money is just showing up in the matchup for whatever particular reason for the syndicates. They like the Rams in this particular matchup, even though, I mean, the Saints ended up being the right side in that earlier matchup between the two teams.
I'm glad that that's the direction you went, because that was where I was hoping you would go. That, you know, I mean, that was, what, week 9, I think. And the Rams at that point were 8-0, did suffer that first loss there to the Saints. And, you know, when the Rams did go out on the road and play some decent teams, they certainly did struggle in that type of role. But that's sort of the question here, I think. It's sort of the crux of the argument is, how much does that game matter? How much does that game mean to you? Obviously, the final, you know, New Orleans was up big in the first half. The Rams tied it in the second half. Then New Orleans scored the final 10 points to win 45-35. How much does that market movement from week 9 matter to you now that we're, what, 3 months beyond that?
Yeah, I mean, 5 points sounds like, you know, a lot. But keep in mind that the Rams were, you know, priced – as the best team in the NFL at that particular point. And we've come out to seeing that that probably just wasn't the case. I remember, I didn't understand that line move back then. I could agree that the Rams at that particular point were a little bit better than the Saints. But I was thinking the Saints would lay, you know, 1, 1.5, 2, and not the other way around. So that was, I do remember that specifically, because that was one line move I just didn't understand. It kind of scared me off of the Saints in that particular game. We found out that, I know, a topsy-turvy game. You know, I wouldn't have adjusted the power ratings too much after that performance, but it's not like I made a major adjustment at the end of that game. You know, what have we seen since? You know, I mean, both teams have, you know, come up in spots that struggled. What I have seen is, if you're asking me who have I downgraded more since, it's been the Rams. I mean, if you look at the Rams against playoff teams, and particularly Jared Goff down the stretch, last three games against playoff teams, Jared Goff's got a 0-5 touchdown interception ratio. So I've actually downgraded the Rams a little bit more than the Saints since that earlier meeting.
Yeah, I think that's the interesting thing. I mean, I think Jared Goff, to some degree, could become the X factor of this game, because, you know, if you're New Orleans, I mean, you have to flood the box here. You just have to. I mean, you've got C.J. Anderson and Todd Gurley both running the football with success, a Rams offensive line that's healthier than it was late in the year. You know, can Goff make those throws? And can Goff make those throws early? And I think that's a really interesting element to this game from a derivative standpoint. How does Sean McVay play this thing? Does he try to establish the run early on because he knows he needs it all game and wants to wear down that Saints defensive front? Or do you try to get Jared Goff some confidence with some easy throws? Maybe this has a little bit more of a frantic pace early on, then it settles in. I don't know, but I think the game flow is really intriguing for this matchup.
It is, and it kind of has me leaning more towards the under here. I know you just had a game between the 245-35, but, I mean, you look at both sides a little bit different from a play-calling aspect. I do, if the Rams, in my opinion, I think are going to go more run-heavy. They'll try to exploit that weakness with New Orleans without one of their – better run stoppers up front, even though the Saints are one of the better teams, rush defenses in the league. I expect that maybe a little bit more of the same here as your young quarterback making his first career playoff road start. He eases him into the game. That's what I would do, but I guess I'm more conservative than most. That's why I'm not a play caller in this particular spot. But and on the flip side, you know, one thing about the Saints team that's kind of been a little bit surprising down the stretch, I mean, the defense has played at an elite level in the second half of the season throughout the Week 17 meeting of this game. And, the Saints' defense has only allowed 14.5 points per game. So if anything, what leads to my conclusion is I'm also not only leaning with the Saints, but I'm leaning more towards the under, and it looks like the market is starting to come off of that 57 number, only available at some square shops at this point.
All right, so let's move over to the AFC Championship game here. We're painted 3 market wide and mostly 3 flat. I mean, you've got Bookmaker at 3 minus $1.20 on Kansas City. Just about everywhere else, flat, Pinnacle, minus 3, minus 108 on Kansas City, plus 3, minus 103 on New England on my odds screen here. So what do you make of that? I mean, the fact that, you know, any hook that was there early in the week is gone, and it almost looks like New England, a little bit of the preferred sharp side here.
It is, but, I mean, I'm not buying it. I mean, the preferred sharp side last week was against the Patriots, and I didn't understand that whatsoever. It just didn't. And honestly, I didn't really care either. I mean, sometimes you always got to respect it, and you can't win long-term fading it. But, I mean, in isolated games, you don't have to agree with that preferred sharp side other than, I mean, then what are you betting for? I mean, if the sharp side was the right side all the time, then the lines would move significantly. I'm not overreacting to what I saw last week from the Patriots because I thought it was an incredible spot for them, and that's exactly how the game played out. Look, it's tough fading Belichick and Brady in the underdog role, but, you know, I think it's deserved here. And keep in mind, New England, on the road this year, completely different team. At home, they're the best team in the NFL. On the road, I can make a case they're below average. I mean, they're 3-5 straight up and against the spread, and I can make a case as far as covering the number. They're extremely fortunate to cover those 3 games. The Chicago game was misleading. New England had a couple of special teams touchdowns. They had a pick 6 against Buffalo when Buffalo was going to get the cover. And then they had to stop the Jets on the 1-yard line late to prevent a backdoor in that one. So, you look at, you know, expectation being the Vegas line. On the road this year, the Patriots came up short of expectation by a combined 74 points on the road. So that's this year. You know, let's look at, you know, the road in the playoffs for the Patriots. Great run here, but everything's been at home or the neutral in the Super Bowl at the last 10 years. I mean, they haven't won a road playoff game since 2007 in January. Tom Brady, at home, playoffs, career, 46 touchdowns, 18 picks. On the road, 8 touchdowns, 8 picks. So completely different team home away this year, completely different team home away for Tom Brady as far as his entire career. To me, even though Andy Reid struggles and has this kind of, you know, a guy that's never won at all against the genius of Belichick, I'm on the Kansas City side.
Are you going to lay the 3, or are you going to wait around for a depressed money line and just go ahead and lay that money line price with Kansas City?
That's a great call. Money line. I think, you know, a little bit, it depends on how low it goes and whatnot. I mean, I'm comfortable laying a 3, but I'd be more comfortable if I get a really suppressed money line because the expectation is the weekend crowd always wants to bet a little to win a lot. And if they can bet a little to win a lot on the New England Patriots in that rare underdog role, I do think we get a suppressed money line. You know, 155 is probably the consensus right now. If I can get a really cheap, you know, like 145, 140, then I'll also have a ticket on that side.
There's been a lot of talk about the total for this game. And really, I think the total for this game is about the only thing that's really jumped around between these two games. Was as high as 57, came down to 54, 54.5. Now we're back up to 55.5. You got any thoughts on the total where the weather forecast is consistently improving?
Yeah, I mean, and that's why it has jumped around. Obviously, weather forecast was, you know, 48 hours ago was really bad, like 5 degrees. And I mean, I know there's stats out there that the market overreacts to cold and all that. But when it's really, really cold, I mean, there's stats out there that I mean, scoring is certainly suppressed when the temperatures are under 10 degrees. But now, I mean, the talk is that it's going to be 20 and still, I mean, that's really cold, but certainly not coldest game in your entire life type of temperature. Probably agree with the market moves here. I get the move on the under earlier in the week, and I get it when the forecast was 15 degrees better than what they're expecting 24 hours later. I get a little bit of the move towards the under. The over. Looking at it, I don't have a significant play right now. If you're saying you give me a $20 bill and say where are you going to bet it, I'd prefer to bet the under. I mean, the Chiefs defensively much better at home as on the road. In fact, at home they're only allowing 17 points per game. At home this year, on the road, 35 points per game. They can get after the quarterback. They led the NFL in sacks. Got after it. If they can get after Andrew Luck on that after that Indianapolis offensive line, I think they can get after Tom Brady here. So I lean a little towards the under.
Well, as we look ahead to Super Bowl 53 here, pulling these numbers from Five Dimes just because it's the first place I looked, Patriots minus one over the Rams, total 57.5. Rams minus one over the Chiefs, total 63.5. Saints minus one against the Patriots, total of 53. Saints minus 2.5 over Kansas City, total 59.5. Pretty interesting there that, you know, we've got some some strange splits, I would say.
Yeah, and I haven't even done, those are, you know, virgin numbers for me. I haven't looked at them. Those are quite a little bit different than what the Westgate, opened up and offered a few days ago. So, I mean, you're not crossing through any key numbers of three, but you're definitely dealing with a couple points difference. I will say one thing, because I was trying to understand why the Saints, as far as the Westgate lines, were favored over both AFC teams by about 1.5. The other two lines were pick 'em. Keep in mind, the Saints will have a little bit of a hidden home field advantage if they make the Super Bowl. It's in Atlanta and a dome, and they play in Atlanta regularly. So keep that in the back of your mind. I think you're going to see at least the marketplace give the Saints a half point to a point of hidden home field advantage when it comes to the Super Bowl.
I think so, too. I think it's a really excellent point to make there. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, total of 63.5 for the Super Bowl if we get Chiefs-Rams. I mean, that's interesting, not just for the game, but obviously, as we've been starting to talk about a little bit here, very interesting for the prop market as well.
Yeah, and I think that's the – if you're looking for the one that's going to get the most handle, I think the bookmakers would cheer on the Rams KC just because of all the different props being very highly priced there. 63.5, if you had to ask me where that would close, you know, under or over that number, I would say over. That number. So, yeah, that would be a very – I don't want New England in the Super Bowl, just from a fan aspect. I'd like to see KC in there, just a different team. And I mean, because the props for New England, it's something that we've seen, year in and year out. And as long as KC's one side of the matchup and whether it's New Orleans or the Rams, I think we'll have a very entertaining and hopefully a very profitable Super Bowl if we can get after some of these numbers.
All right, let's talk college basketball here for the last 15 minutes or so of our segment. And I've been trying to do some conference-by-conference breakdowns here because conference tournament's about, you know, 4 or 5 weeks away now for the small conferences and a little bit more than that for the two that we're going to talk about. But we're going to talk about the ACC and the SEC here, time permitting, on this segment. And let's start in the ACC where you've got basically, almost six top 15 teams. Of course, North Carolina State will drop after that loss to Wake Forest. But you got a Syracuse team that knocked off Duke this week. You got a Louisville team that looks really good. Obviously, Duke, Virginia Tech, top 10 caliber teams. What are you seeing from the ACC here so far, Brad?
There's a couple surprises. NC State, Virginia Tech, a little bit better than expected. A couple of teams have obviously taken a little bit of a down turn this season, like teams like Notre Dame and Miami. What I'm seeing, though, is by far the best conference, in my opinion, in all of college basketball. I mean, prior to the, Duke with the injuries there, I think you had at least two of the three best teams, if not the two best teams, in Duke of Virginia, who obviously play this upcoming Saturday. I've seen a lot of inconsistencies. I mean, let's take North Carolina, for example. A team that I thought had turned the corner after they struggled a little bit non-conference, got blown out by Michigan. They went and covered four straight, including an impressive one against NC State. and you're thinking, hey, they turned the corner, and then what happens? The Tar Heels suffer their worst home loss in 16 years under their head coach, Roy Williams, against Louisville. And then you think, you know, that's an outlier. North Carolina had their worst shooting percentage of the season. It happens. The ball doesn't go in the bucket that particular night. I thought, you know, I don't lay double digits too much in college hoops, but I thought it was a good spot to do so against Notre Dame. And yet the Tar Heels struggled the majority of that game, didn't even come close to covering the numbers. So some inconsistencies from one team, but I guess if I'm going to isolate one, it'd be Virginia. I think we're seeing more of the same. Virginia, from a consistent aspect, probably the best regular season team in college basketball last 4 or 5 years. Still going to be some major question marks come March, when it comes to March, and whether they can kick it up an extra gear from a scoring aspect. But right now, it doesn't get any better in Virginia. What they did to annihilating Virginia Tech, their rival, the other night, and I think it's a favorable matchup for them against a beat-up Duke team. I think Virginia is the best team in the country at this point.
All right, so from a betting standpoint here in the ACC, what is it about for you? I mean, are you looking for spot plays then, you know, sort of the letdowns after playing the best teams or the look-aheads, or, you know, are you trying to get a feel for that middle group of, you know, NC State, Georgia Tech, Pitt, those types of teams, and then look for spots to play on them?
That's a good call. I mean, if you're telling me, you know, who do I want to play on coming down the stretch of the season, maybe Syracuse, a win like that over Duke can really turn around your entire season. Maybe they finally live up to their potential. And obviously their zone, I mean, they're as far as the height aspect, they're the tallest team in the country if you're taking their starting rotation. And that might be more of a play on team at this particular point. Play against for me. I worry coming down the stretch, Notre Dame team that's very depth shy, even though I think very, very highly of Mike Bray, their head coach. I just think a Notre Dame team down the stretch of the season, very depth shy, that'd be a concern. But you're right. To me, it's all about spot play. And to me, the unfortunate thing, I thought, you know, for a majority of January and early February, we could make money and maybe still can fading Duke. Why? A lot of people transitioning from football to basketball, they're going to go for the known commodity. And, you know, it doesn't get any more known than Duke when they're sitting on top of the polls. You know, unfortunate that they suffered some injuries. The market, I'll take that, obviously, and account for that. But I thought you'd be laying some very hefty point spreads with the Blue Devils. And my expectation throughout the course of January, you can make money fading Duke.
Let's talk about Virginia Tech for a second here. I mean, they had that loss at Penn State, and Penn State's really struggling through Big Ten play right now. I know a lot of people liked them a little bit in that game against Iowa, and they just didn't show particularly well in that spot. And then the blowout loss to Virginia. And in between, they played a lot of below-average, really marginal types of teams there. How are you approaching Virginia Tech, who's, you know, really since the Virginia games last year, playing a really different style of basketball than we're used to seeing from Buzz Williams?
Yeah, we definitely are. A team more known defensively, but really it's the offense that's carried them this year. They're in the top 10 as far as offensive efficiency. But you mentioned something that's very important. I still think you can get some value throughout the next couple of weeks. Played a very soft schedule. In fact, if you're going through KenPom's, you know, adjusted ratings, you look at the top 25 teams in there. By far, Virginia Tech has the weakest strength of schedule. Where's that going to show up? Well, it'll probably start showing up when it comes to conference play. You know, fortunate for Virginia Tech, they started off with three of the weaker teams in the ACC, Notre Dame, Boston College, and Georgia Tech. You know, is the truth of Virginia Tech more what we saw against Virginia? If that's the case, and maybe when they're playing Wake Forest this weekend, I'm not going to take advantage of it. But maybe I can get some extra value when they're playing teams like North Carolina and Syracuse and NC State coming up on deck in a couple of weeks. That to me, if you're asking me, what do I see? First off, Buzz Williams done a great job there. But I would say over the next 5-6 games, my expectation would be that I would more like to fade Virginia Tech than be on top than be on them.
All right, so let's go to the SEC here, because I think this is a little bit more complex and nuanced of a conference. You've got Tennessee, who stands out. I mean, they're 15-1 straight up, 4-0 here in conference play. South Carolina, 4-0, which is very surprising, considering they were 5-7 in non-conference play. LSU still doesn't have an SEC loss. And then you've got Ole Miss, one of the top ATS teams in the country. Kentucky, they already have a loss. Auburn, top 15 caliber team, they have a loss. This conference is setting up to be kind of strange, I think.
Kind of strange, but let's tip our cap. You know, a few years ago, I mean, the SEC, you know, the commissioner sat down with the athletic directors and said, hey, we need to start focusing in and putting a little bit more emphasis on basketball. It can't be just all football for this conference year round. And from when you got a network, we need to, you know, have the, it can't be Kentucky and everybody else. And that was done maybe more than a couple of years ago, maybe three, four years ago at this point. So what I saw was more of an emphasis. You got some really good hires, you know, a guy like Rick Barnes at Tennessee, you know, Ben Holland at Mississippi State, obviously Kermit Davis this year at Ole Miss. If you're asking me National Coach of the Year, I'd probably put him up there. From a Vegas aspect, he certainly is. It isn't even close when you got arguably the top ATS team in the country, his new team, Ole Miss. And the team he left, Middle Tennessee, is the worst team in the country against the spread. It started with coaching for me. They started hiring better coaches, more of an emphasis. And what I'm seeing, a little bit, you know, different conference. I'm seeing a very balanced conference, and not balanced that, hey, that there's really no good, you know, really good teams. I mean, you got one elite team in Tennessee, and you know, surprisingly, and the SEC last year got as many NCAA tournament invites as they've ever had before, could break that this year. I mean, I see in my, looking at my power rankings right now, as far as, you know, the top 40, I got 7 or 8 teams in there again. So to me, how am I going to attack the SEC? It's going to be more spot play. You know, LSU's been very good at home as compared to the road. A lot of these teams, their home away splits have been incredible. The Kentuckys, the Georgias of the world. So, to me, it's going to be more situational than anything, but a very interesting conference nonetheless. And I don't know if I could say that 5-6 years ago with the SEC. The SEC 5-6 years ago was pretty much what the Pac-12, you know, outside of Kentucky, is what the Pac-12 is right now.
Yeah, the Pac-12 is bad. I mean, it's real rough out there right now out on the West Coast. But let me ask you this for the SEC and ACC discussion. You know, one of the things that's really interesting about these leagues is you play all these high-octane games, these ranked matchups, and then all of a sudden you're going to find yourself playing, you know, Vanderbilt or Boston College or, you know, Wake Forest. I mean, we saw NC State trip up against Wake Forest the other night. In terms of the bottom of these two conferences here, which one do you think is better?
Ooh, that's a good question. Remarkable, you know, coming into conference play. I mean, I had South Carolina as the worst team in the SEC. Not been the case there. That's been a surprise. I think the bottom for the SEC right now, and this is stunning to me, is better than the bottom of the ACC. I mean, you look at the ACC bottom, I mean, I'm just not seeing a lot of buy signs for teams like Wake Forest, Boston College, Georgia Tech, Pittsburgh's maybe making a little bit of a run with Capel there in his first year. I think the bottom of the SEC is, in fact, much better, especially if you take into consideration South Carolina making a run. I have every single SEC team in my power rating in my top 100 right now. So no other – I don't think I could say that for just about any conference. Maybe the Big 12 I can – yeah, Big 12 I can say it, but, I mean, you're telling – you're comparing 10 teams to 14. Of the major conferences that have 14 teams in it, the SEC, I think from top to bottom, probably the strongest at this point. There's not a lot of weaknesses there as far as really bottom-level teams.
Well, and the reason why I bring that up is because, you know, we talk about spot plays, and the elite big-name teams are going to be asked to cover big numbers when they play the bottom of the conference. So you know, you sort of want to have an idea of, you know, which of the conference teams can actually step up and play well enough to, you know, give those big boys a scare. And you know, you kind of wonder if that's the SEC or the ACC this year, because we know Duke, Virginia, so on and so forth, are going to lay big numbers. But you know, which conference is going to have the premier teams able to cover them. I think that's what you really want to look for here, because when Virginia and North Carolina play or Duke and Virginia play, there's no value in that number. You got to find the value when it's a good team against one of the lesser teams.
Yeah, you do. And, you know, more, you're just not going to find, value, you know, from a consistent basis, you know, playing the more name brand teams. And the thing is, the SEC, I mean, very name brand when it comes to football. Not so much, they don't have the same pedigree when it comes to basketball. So, you know, on one hand, we're saying, I'm at least saying that it's a more balanced conference, and I wouldn't be opposed to you know, teams like Texas A&M, South Carolina, Vanderbilt, wouldn't be opposed to you know, playing them in those spots. But on the other hand, this is why this industry can be more, you know, art than science. I'm not always outside of Kentucky and maybe Tennessee this year because they've been so good. I'm not paying the same type of premiums if I want to back those teams in the top 20 like I do the name brand programs that are in the ACC. So, you know, there can still be some value if you're laying a little bit of a number on the SEC. I mean, Ole Miss, just you know, prior to the loss against LSU, even though they were the best ATS team in the country, I looked at my power ratings and looked at their last few games, I didn't think you were paying that much of a premium on Ole Miss, despite the fact they were the best ATS team in the country. So even though they're big name programs and Power Five conferences, the SEC teams that just don't get that national recognition when it comes to the hardwood.
So I'm looking up and down the Thursday card here. Ton of games. And by the way, as we've talked about already here, a lot of conferences getting lined on a regular basis this year that previously weren't. The WAC, the Big South, the Atlantic Sun, MEAC, SWAC, Southland, all those types of leagues. Got some of those games here tonight, full-on WAC card. Only two ranked teams in action tonight, Michigan State with a tough game against Nebraska, then Gonzaga laying a gigantic number against Loyola Marymount. In terms of these Thursday night cards, Brad, where it's a lot of mid and low majors, I mean, are these the days you like at this time of the year, or do you like the days when the name brands are playing and you can, you know, look to fade some of that perception?
No, I kind of like, you know, Thursday is one of my more favorite days. Because you get a lot of intriguing matchups because a lot of these Thursday games, they're turning around and playing over the weekend. And maybe not the values on the Thursday card, but the result of the Thursday card usually sets me up nicely for the weekend because you get short turnarounds, you get teams playing, you know, back-to-back road trips, you know, on short rest. I think whatever happens on Thursday night, I really like to use that to my advantage when it comes to the weekend. But, you know, when it comes to college basketball, because there's, what, 353 Division I teams, you're always, if you want to have more success than most, pick just a few conferences. And I'd say pick a bigger conference just because, I mean, it's easier to follow. Pick one of those and then pick one of the smaller conferences and know the ins and outs of that. I mean, if you want to have some success. So, on these particular nights, of course, you know, most of the action is going to be on that Michigan State-Nebraska game, and not so much. I don't think a lot of people are going to be wanting to take 23.5 Gonzaga, but I know a lot of sharp people just don't lay, you know, in the 20s when it comes to basketball too much, although they probably should. Gonzaga is one of the best ATS teams in the country. I think there is some value. If you isolate a conference, say the Big West usually is on Thursday, you can find some value, and but me, at least as I'm easing myself into this, I like to take the results from this night, and I find even more value on the weekend.
I like that. I really like that strategy. I think that's very, very important because, you know, we've talked about this before too. Road games tend to be grouped geographically. So if you're in Conference USA, you'll play UTSA and UTEP together. If you're in the Sun Belt, I think it's Coastal Carolina and either App State or Georgia State, something like that. You know, so you know, these games are grouped together, and you can get some really good angles going into Saturday. And that's why it's important, even if you don't have a bet on a game, pay attention to the box scores, pay attention to the lineups, yep, and what happens. You'll get some ideas for the weekend.
You certainly will. And definitely pay attention to some of the line moves, the overnights, because that's some of the sharper money telling you, and kind of maybe giving some context clues to what will happen just a few days from now, unless there's an extreme result. And a lot of times I like fading extreme results unless there was something, you know, a clear reason why it happened. But, yeah, I Thursday to Saturday, I love handicapping that. So more often than not, I'm diving through every single box score tonight and really finding some value over the weekend.
Are you playing overnights? I mean, obviously you can't release overnights to clients, but you know, from a personal standpoint, are you confident enough right now to play the overnights, or are you kind of waiting for, you know, the market to settle in on game day?
It depends. If I get, when it comes to hoops this time of year, I lean on some of the guys that I'm associated with, just because they've been studying more than me. I'm a big time originator when it comes to college football. I do my power rings, and I know a lot don't do 353 all teams, but I start diving in. A couple of overnights, not consistently, probably another week or two until I'm consistently betting overnights. But you're exactly right. It's tough giving them the clients when they can't get after those numbers.
Brad Powers, professional handicapper over at bradpowerssports.com. What's going on over there right now, man?
Yeah, if you want to check out the newsletter, again, that's mainly football. Obviously, three games left of the football season. But, you know, if you want to see what I'm all about, or you just want to see, hey, you know, this guy sounds like he can talk a good game, but let's see some of the work that he does. Just go there. You can download all past issues of my newsletter. I can promise you won't be at least disappointed with the amount of info that I put into that. Now, as far as basketball goes, I don't do a weekly newsletter when it comes to basketball. What I do are daily VIP updates, where I write up a few games, tell you what I'm betting, tell you some of the bigger games where I would lean. That's a little bit of a different price point when you're talking daily. Newsletter for the rest of the year is $29, covers you through the Super Bowl. VIP, as far as college hoops, $299 all the way through March Madness and the National Championship game. Check me out, bradpowersports.com.
And as always, you can follow Brad on Twitter at Brad Powers and the number 7. Brad, appreciate the time as always, sir. Thank you so much, man, and we'll talk to you again next week.
All right, sounds good, my friend. Take care.